Good afternoon and welcome to the National Press Club. My name is Jerry Zaremski and I'm the Washington Bureau Chief for the Buffalo News and President of the National Press Club. I'd like to welcome our club members and their guests who are here with us today, as well as the audience that's watching on C-SPAN. We're looking forward to today's speech, and afterwards, I'll ask as many questions as time permits. Please hold your applause during the speech so that I can ask as many questions as possible. And let me remind our broadcast audience that if you hear applause during the speech, it may be from the guests and members of the general public who attend our luncheons and not necessarily from the working press. I'd now like to introduce our head table guests and ask them to stand briefly when their names are called. From your right, Jeffrey Young of The Hill newspaper, Laura Robertson of CBN News, Joe Enoch of ConsumerAffairs.com, Larry Lippman of Cox News and former National Press Club president, Greg Morris, Deputy Chief of Staff at the Department of Health and Human Services and a guest of the speaker, Matt Canham of the Salt Lake Tribune, Rich McCune, Chief of Staff for the Department of Health and Human Services and a guest of the speaker. Skipping over the podium, Melissa Charbonneau of CBN News and the Vice Chair of the NPC Speakers Committee. Skipping over our speaker for just one moment, Robert Cardin, the Speakers Committee member who organized today's event. Rick Campanelli, Counselor to the Secretary and a guest of the Secretary. Suzanne Straglinski of the Deseret Morning News. Catherine M. Skiba, author and journalist. Lisa Friedman of the Los Angeles Daily News. And Keith Hill of BNA, the Vice Chair of the National Press Club Board of Governors. Anyone who has children or who's buying Christmas gifts probably will be very interested in what our speaker today has to say. Michael Levitt, the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, joins us having just returned from China, where he met Chinese leaders to discuss measures that must be taken to ensure that imports are safe. As we all know, a number of Chinese products and toys have been pulled off store shelves lately because of the hazards they pose. Shoppers are nervous, and importers are scrambling to repair the damage. And Secretary Levitt is in the unique position of having discussed all this with the Chinese leadership. Michael Levitt has been Secretary of HHS since January 2005. HHS is one of the largest civilian departments within the federal government, with more than 67,000 employees. As head of HHS, he has led efforts to enroll millions of seniors in the Medicare drug benefit, and he's overseen the medical response to Hurricane Katrina. Prior to becoming HHS Secretary, Mr. Levitt served the Bush administration as head of the Environmental Protection Agency. And before that, he served three terms as the governor of Utah. During that time, he was chosen by his peers to head the National Governors Association, and he was also named and during his term as governor, Utah was named the best managed state and the best place to locate a business. A graduate of Southern Utah University, Secretary Levitt was originally in the insurance business before entering the public sector, so maybe he has some thoughts on the actuarial risk of some of these products that have been pulled off the market. In all seriousness, though, please join me in welcoming HHS Secretary Michael Levitt back to the National Press Club.
Good afternoon. Melissa and I have just had a delightful conversation about the Olympics and the 2002 Winter Games, of which I was part because of the because of my role as governor. One morning preceding the Olympics, I was on a chairlift at a Utah ski resort, and I met a man by the name of Tom Kershaw, who happens to own a great American institution, the Cheers Bar in Boston. It was a happenstantial meeting, but one I enjoyed, and not long ago, I was in Boston, and I called my friend Tom and asked if he could have lunch, and we sat down at the Cheers Bar, and the topic of import safety came up. I said, "Do you use imported products much here?" He said, "No, I don't think so." His chef happened to be in the room, and he said, "Marcus, do we use imported products here?" He said, "I don't think so." Well, we got up and started walking around doing a little tour, and we went into his pantry, and began to open up the refrigerated area, and we found cod loins from China. We found asparagus from Peru. We found lemons from Mexico, and lamb ribs from Australia, and tomatoes from Canada. And we found pasta from Italy. We found tuna from Thailand. We found chocolate from Belgium. And I think it's probably likely that if you were to go to the pantry of most American families, you'd find a similar array of products. Now, this dilemma that we are now facing of product safety is not unique to the United States. I had the health ministers from 8 industrialized countries here, plus the representatives of the European Union. They were here to talk about a wide variety of health issues, but this issue dominated our conversation. This is happening around the world. Why? Why now? Well, I would offer that it is because something is changing. There is fundamental change. We are seeing a global economy. What's driving it? Well, I was in a grocery store not long ago in Detroit, and I met a man named Dan who ran the produce. Dan the produce man. I said, you've been in this business 30 years. What has been the most significant change you have seen? He said, it's what consumers want. They want to have fresh strawberries in February. They want to have blooming sunflowers in November, and we can now give it to them. We can give it to them because of shipping technology. We now have massive ships. We have air freight that allows literally point-to-point delivery overnight. We have standardized cargo systems that allow for it to be done efficiently. I've also come to understand that there's another reason, and that is the connectedness of the entire global economy. Systems exist that allow people to go into a grocery store and choose whatever product they would choose. What they don't see is that once that cash register rings electronically to the distributor and then to the manufacturer, a new product is developed no matter where it is in the world. So it's likely as you reach onto the shelf of a grocery store in the U.S., it's creating a reorder for a new fish product in Vietnam. The connectedness of the world. And I would also argue one other important aspect. We have seen the adoption of a market economy by much of the communist world in the last decade and a half, and it has dramatically impacted the availability and supply of goods and services across the globe. Issues like imports and import safety tend to mature and to ripen over time. I remember while I was governor, actually within 2 weeks of having been governor, I had a meeting with some advocates for child safety who told me our system was seriously broken and needed to be fixed. They said they were going to bring litigation to do that. I asked them for some time. Within 2 weeks, we were in litigation. It was a problem I had to deal with as governor over a period of time, but what I learned when I got into it was they were right. The system had not been kept up with the times. It needed to be modernized. It needed to be improved. Well, issues like that one and issues like product safety have in common that they mature and ripen, and then there are some flashpoint issues, some flashpoint events, and those events begin to manifest the warning signs that something underneath in the system isn't right and that it requires a policy response. Well, that's precisely what I think we have seen in the last 6 or 8 months of this year. We have begun to see warning signs that our system is not adequate for the future. I would like to say we have a good system of product safety, but it is not adequate for the future. And I think that's a fundamental and important lesson that I have drawn. The president, I believe wisely, responded quickly. He appointed a working group at the highest level of government. There are actually 10 members of his cabinet, plus the Consumer Product Safety Commission and the FDA. Now, I think the group that he appointed to review this on a top to bottom basis is revealing, because it reveals one of the basic and fundamental characteristics of this dilemma. HHS, who he appointed as chair, the Department of State, the Department of Treasury, the Department of Justice, Agriculture, Commerce, Transportation, Homeland Security, Budget, Trade, Environmental Protection Agency, Consumer Product Safety Commission. Why were they there? They're all relevant to this issue. This stretches across all of government and has many, many different perspectives. Now, we divided this problem into two parts. The first part was to develop teams that went deep into the federal government, making what I believe may be the most robust inspection of our import safety system ever made. The teams asked questions. The questions you would ask: are our current authorities adequate? What are the authorities? What changes need to be made in order to respond to this new environment? What are the limitations? What new authorities do we need? How much resource do we need to make this work? The second part was to fan out across the country and actually see it and feel it and to talk to people. Personally, I went to seaports and border crossings. I went to freight hubs. I went to distribution facilities. I went to wholesalers, retailers. I went to food and drug processors. I saw laboratories. I spent time at the FDA. I spent time with inspectors from USDA and the customs. Before I was done, I felt like that Willie Nelson song, I've Been Everywhere, man. But it was a fascinating experience to see the totality of this system. Now, the good news is, then, this deep look we did inside the bureaucracy and this widespread inspection that we began to make, that themes began to bubble up, and they were the same themes. Now, one important observation is just how big this is. How much stuff it takes to fill up the American pantry every morning and have it empty out that night. There are 800,000 different sources from which we import goods into this country. They come through more than 300 different ports. It amounts to nearly $2 trillion. Now, just to give you some perspective, that is about twice the entire gross domestic product of Brazil. What's more, it's going to get bigger. We are seeing a rapid expansion of this. Estimates are that between now and 2015, we may see it somewhere between 2 or 3 times the imports that we're currently seeing. So, two observations from that experience. The first is, we simply cannot inspect our way to product safety. There's just too much of it, and to inspect everything would bring the global economy to a crawl, and consumers would not have their expectations met. The second I've already indicated, we have a good system of import safety today, but it is not adequate for the future. And we have to make a fundamental change in our strategy. In the past, our strategy basically has been to stand at the border and to try to catch things that are unsafe or low quality as they come into the country. The new strategy is that we have to roll the borders back, and we have to make certain that safety is built into every product at every step of the way. Now, let me tell you just two experiences I had out on the road that I think poignantly make this new strategy come to life. I was standing next to an FDA inspector, a man in a blue uniform. He said to me, "Mr. Secretary, our job is to find the needle in the haystack. But our first job, what we have to do to accomplish that, is we've got to shrink the size of the haystack. And we do that with new technologies." And he said, "The second thing we have to do is we have to know who we can trust. We need to focus on people who break the rules and make it easier for people who keep the rules and people we know we can trust." The second conversation came from a man who was managing a lettuce processing plant down in the El Paso, Texas area. Actually, I guess it was Dallas. He said to me, our motto here is know your grower. What do you mean, know your grower? He said, we not only want to know where this came from, I want to know when it was planted. I want to know the kind of nutrients that were placed on it. I want to know the quality of the water that was fed to it. I want to know when it was picked. I want to know how cold it was when it was transported. I want to know the day it got here. In other words, I want to build quality every step of the way so that when it gets to me, I know its quality because I know every step and how it occurred. Now, in November, we reported to the president this need for a new strategic direction, and we made recommendations, 50 of them, very specific recommendations in 14 different categories. Each of you will have access, I hope today, to a copy of this report. As I indicated, I believe it's among the most complete reviews of this system ever undertaken. I won't go through all 50 today, but I would like to just highlight what I believe are the key points. The first is the need for this change in strategy that I've already enumerated. But to support that, we need strong certification authorities and processes. We need the authority in government to require certain producers of high-risk products to have certified to the U.S. standards that they're meeting them. Now, when I talk about certification, in some cases, that will be a government. In other cases, it will be an independent certification process. Now, we all deal with these independent certifications every day. We may not think about them. The Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval, that is a independent appraisal of the quality, and we depend on it because we trust it. Another is Underwriter's Laboratory, an independent inspection of the process that gives us confidence that we can trust the producer of these goods. So having the authority to require certification. The second would be rewarding good practices. Bottom line, we want to make it easier for people who keep the rules to get their goods into the United States, and we want to make it harder for those that don't. If you're prepared on a voluntary basis to have somebody we trust certify that you're keeping all the rules, then we'll make it easier for you to get your goods here. But if you don't, you need to understand we're going to inspect you with more rigor than those that don't. We want to reward good practices. Third would be greater transparency. Consumers deserve to know who it is that imports unsafe products. They need to know who it is that does safe products. One thing we know for certain, and that is that the global market will punish harshly and rapidly anyone who does not produce safe and high-quality products. Transparency is the key. Fourth area would be increased presence overseas. By that I mean to say employees of the United States government in different places around the world. We need to build that into our trade agreements. We need to increase the training that that we provide to other countries. And we need to have, in some cases, physical inspections in other areas. But the primary purpose of these overseas is to help others understand the message that if you're going to send goods to the United States, you need to meet our standards of quality and our standards of safety. Another important recommendation is enhanced standards. If we're going to have a certification process, we need to have high standards, and they need to be, in some cases, raised or in some cases set. There are areas where we don't have standards that we need them. Sixth, I would mention stronger penalties. There are times when the marketplace will penalize people, but government needs to have at its disposal stronger penalties. Currently for food, for example, the penalties are a maximum of $1.4 million. We've recommended that Congress give us authority to fine them as much as $10 million. We also have begun to look for authorities like the capacity to raise bond requirements and also to have asset forfeitures when things are clearly used in a way that were intended to break the law. A seventh recommendation is interoperable systems. Now, let me illustrate this for you. I spent a lot of time at borders. I think I inspected personally everything from imported tire irons to gingerbread houses. But one thing that was uniform all across those 300 ports is that FDA people tell me I have to remember 5 passwords in order to get into the various parts of our system. And I can't get everything on one screen. And what's more, I can't get the information that the customs people have. And when I talked to the customs people, they told me we've got 7 passwords that I need to remember. So actually interoperability of systems to where people can have one screen where all of the information is necessary will dramatically shrink the haystack, if you will. Now, I want to underscore an important point here. A lot of what I've just talked about is already happening. And our group did not invent these as ideas. We simply observed them happening and believe that they need to be incorporated at every level. The second point I would make is that not only are they already happening, but we also put forward, in addition to this, a full plan on the domestic food production. They're so closely interrelated. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about our domestic today because we're talking about the supply of imported foods today. Now, simultaneous with all of this, as is mentioned, was a discussion we began with China. How did it come about? Well, obviously in May and June and July, there were a series of things that occurred. Toothpaste, pet food, and toys, and a whole series of other things. In June, we had ministers from the Chinese government here, and in the course of all that, we had a very frank conversation. In essence, saying to them, we want the Chinese government to have access to our markets. We want to have access to yours. But if you're going to produce food, if you're going to produce goods and products for American consumers, they need to meet American standards of safety and quality. And you have, meaning China, a very significant stake here because the Made in China brand will over time be seriously undermined if we don't deal with this issue. Well, later that night, in private conversations, we mutually committed ourselves that over the next 6 months, we would meet and aggressively work on solving this problem together. I asked Andy Van Eschenbach, who is the head of the FDA, to assemble a technical team. The ministers and I from the Chinese government agreed that we wanted to keep this at a very senior level, minister to minister, and I assigned Rich McKeon, who was my chief of staff, to represent me, and they appointed representatives. And for 6 months, in 4 different rounds of negotiations, we had what I think anyone would consider very tough but productive negotiations. And from that came 2 agreements. The first one is on food and drugs. The second is on food and feed. The second was on drugs and devices. The agreements satisfy the principle that was our underlying principle, and that is goods that come to America have to meet our standards. Now, the agreements have 3 basic strategies involved, all of them consistent with this master plan that we've developed. The 3 strategies include registration, certification, and verified compliance. They are agreements that have timetables, that have specific deliverables on both parts. They are action-oriented with respect to registration. The agreements define a set of high-risk products and require the Chinese government to have every producer who makes those kinds of products for American consumption register with their government. They agreed to share that information on a transparent basis with us. They also agreed that any food on that list of high-risk products would require a certification that it meets our standards. And lastly, that they would verify by creating the kind of electronic barcoding system that it will allow us and them to track products all the way back to the source. I visited an orange juice factory that packages orange juice that you drink every day. And it became clear to me that they have the capacity, using this barcode technology, to literally transfer all the way back to the orange on the tree when it was picked, knowing their grower. That's the strategy. The agreements also require the Chinese government in those high-risk categories to inspect every year every producer that has registered with them and to inform us if any of those producers fail to pass the inspection for any reason. It allows us to access their production, their producers in their country, either on a notice or without notice basis. All of this, again, is consistent with our overall strategy of food and product safety. I want to emphasize this is just a beginning point. We're learning to do this better, to develop new tools for this global marketplace. We're inventing tools to solve problems that have not existed in the past in the proportion that they do today. I'd like to tell you five lessons that I learn from our experience in negotiating with the Chinese on this matter. And I want to tell you, I want to talk about them as lessons because, again, this isn't a problem that's defined by the United States and China. This is about the global marketplace. This is the maturing of a global marketplace, and we're inventing these tools, so these lessons are important. The first lesson is what I've suggested. This truly is a global problem. We are seeing this occur and mature and develop, and unless we get in front of it, we'll see it expand as a problem. But there's nothing unusual about a problem maturing like this as the circumstance changes. The second lesson is how many different perspectives there are in considering a problem. I mentioned the 12 different departments of the federal government that have a role. If you are a law enforcement person standing at the border looking for unsafe things, this looks a lot different to you than if you are a trade person trying to figure out how to engender trade between you and another country. If you are a health person, it looks different than either of those. If you're a private sector person, it looks different than if you're a public sector. So a major part of this is beginning to see all of the perspectives and find solutions that are common to those perspectives. The third lesson is that we're dealing with different systems of government, and hence different systems of regulation. Our task is not always to get those systems of government to change, but to find ways of making different systems interoperable, or that is to say, to unite our different systems with common goals. And those goals often take the form of standards. Now, there's a very interesting example of this. Some 20 or so years ago, the cargo and shipping business began to evolve into a series of standard crate sizes, 20 and 40 and 45 feet. And so now if you go to any port in the world, you will see these same sizes being handled by an interoperable system, and it moves freight rapidly, smoothly, and efficiently, because we have standards that bridge different systems. We need to have not only standards in cargo, we need standards in products. If a person is producing a stroller in China, they need to know that they're producing it according to a standard that'll be acceptable in the European Union and in the United States. The third is the need for the fourth lesson I wanted to talk about is the need for transparency. Transparency, the relationship between transparency and speed and trust are very important here. In a global market, speed is life. And if you're inspecting products, what you're doing is slowing those products down and you're killing competitiveness. Safety and competition, or rather in a competitive market, safety and being competitive can only be achieved when you know who you can trust. Transparency brings trust. Trust brings speed. Speed wins in a global market. The key to product safety in the future will be transparent, interoperable systems where people know who produces goods that are safe and effective and who doesn't, with a government that can support that process. Lastly, I would just emphasize that this is an ongoing process. There's no one report, no one agreement that will solve this problem entirely. This is a maturing problem. It will be a maturing solution. There's a Chinese saying that a man who would move a mountain starts by moving small stones. It requires continual improvement. We are inventing tools for the 21st century. It requires change. Change in the global market, there are three ways you can deal with it. You can fight it and fail. Two, you can accept it and survive. Or three, you can lead and prosper. This problem is one we can and will solve, and it's one we must lead so that we may continue to prosper.